This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. In spite of the fact that former President Donald Trump is facing many dozens of criminal charges and is scheduled for several trials between now and the next election, he's determined to resume residency at the White House. The Republican voter base is equally determined to support him. But legal scholars contend that because he led an insurrection against the United States, he is disqualified from holding office under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. To that end, Free Speech for People is leading a campaign in multiple states to disqualify Trump from the ballot. Joining me to discuss it is Amira Matar, counsel at Free Speech for People. Welcome to the program, Amira.
Thanks for having me.
So first, tell us about the 14th Amendment. What is Section 3? What exactly does it say? Because the language matters.
Right. So most people know the 14th Amendment to be a law that was passed in the wake of the Civil War. And it gave, at that time, really transformative rights that we know and rely on today, like due process, like equal protection of the law. That's what most Americans remember the 14th Amendment by. But in fact, what was the most transformative provision of that amendment was Section 3. And that section made it certain that those who engaged in an insurrection or rebellion, at that time being the Civil War, can't ever be trusted for public office again. And it was really a monumental feat of targeting the leadership class at that time. The framers of the amendment knew that once the war was over and the country would be reunified, and after the South lost the war, it's true that the South lost the war, but in many ways, politically and socially, the South remained the same. So the framers of the amendment determined that it would not allow war to happen again and disqualified all those who engaged in insurrection, including the leadership class, until and unless Congress granted them amnesty.
So the term the language around what disqualifies someone like Trump uses the word insurrection and rebellion, but does the Constitution define these terms? And that's something that other legal scholars have said remains in question, because if you define it too broadly, you infringe on civil liberties and the rights of people to speak out against, you know, government excess. But if it's too narrow, then Trump might not meet that definition, or he may contend that it's being honed in or used as a cudgel specifically against him. Is that a problem, that the Constitution doesn't define those terms, insurrection and rebellion?
Well, the legal definition of insurrection has been defined in case precedent. So we do understand from historic precedent and even the most recent precedent in the past couple of years what insurrection and rebellion mean and what they stand for. And here, when, you know, Trump was deeply involved in every stage leading up to and during the insurrection. So we have historic precedent and also recent precedent to determine what insurrection means and how Trump actually engaged in it.
So basically, the idea is going to be, I imagine, debated in court. Tell me a little bit now about what Free Speech for People, the organization you represent, that you're counsel for, has done specifically in Minnesota, and other organizations like CRU have done in other states, like I believe Colorado is a state. What are these state-by-state legal efforts to use Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to keep Trump off the ballot?
Right. On September 12, Free Speech for People actually filed a petition in state court on behalf of a few Minnesota voters. And they are petitioning the Secretary of State to remove Trump from the ballot based on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And what they're claiming is that Trump is not legally eligible to be placed on the ballot. So, in the same way that we in the Constitution forbid 5-year-olds from running for president or third-term presidents from running for office, so too does our Constitution forbid those who took an oath of office and later broke it. And in Minnesota, we have challengers who are now asking the Secretary of State to abide by the Constitution and by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and to ensure that Trump is not on the ballot. And this is one case among a few. CREW, which is a partner organization, also filed suit in Colorado using Colorado state law on behalf of Colorado voters to ask the Colorado Secretary of State the same exact thing based on the same principle and the same legal arguments.
Now, I understand that there was also an effort in Florida that was dismissed by a judge.
That's correct. There was a case brought in Florida by a solo petitioner, by a practitioner. That case was brought in federal court. And what's different about our efforts versus that one is that our efforts are based on state law. They're brought in state proceedings, whether that's a state court or CREW. I mean, these are state proceedings. That one was in federal court, and that was determined that the petitioner there didn't have standing to actually bring that case. It's great to see that the movement for disqualification is growing, that there are actually many efforts going on across the country. And the Florida case was one of them, but they have to be litigated in the appropriate forums.
I see. So you have to have standing, of course, every time you bring a case to show that the plaintiff is being harmed in some way. And so did the effort in Florida, because it was brought in federal court, did that teach the movement, or is that a precedent or not a precedent, I should say? Is that something that the legal effort that state by state can build on, say, okay, since it was considered as not having standing in federal court, state courts have to be the arena, especially of course since our elections are run by states and we have, the bizarre electoral college system, which is a state by state representation.
Right. Well, Free Speech for People has always said that state courts should, or state proceedings should be the appropriate forum. And we've said it for a while where we said we would be filing in multiple different states. And that's because states across the country have procedures for allowing voters to challenge candidates. That is, it's already written into law. There are proper procedures in place for voters to be involved and for them to be able to have a say in the candidates and their eligibility.
Now, where else besides Minnesota and Colorado is this effort being launched? Can you give me a sense of the scope of this legal effort? Is the plan to do it in all 50 states or just very key states?
Well, it's true that Trump is disqualified in all 50 states. But Free
And
Speech for
actually, let me
People.
just have you pause there for a minute. When you say that, you're suggesting that this legal effort is just an attempt to get courts to affirm something that is already true, right? Under the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the Constitution, he is disqualified.
Yeah, exactly. He is disqualified. He doesn't meet the constitutional requirements to run for office. And what is going to happen is either courts can affirm that or secretaries of states can take action on their own accord and say that they will not certify Trump on the ballot. So that is across the United States, all 50 states, and the District of Columbia. As for Free Speech for People, we'll be bringing litigation in a few key states. We're not necessarily going to mention where or when. We're not going to let Trump know that, but we are eyeing a few key states.
If this effort moves forward, I imagine that it's sort of inevitable it's going to end up in front of the Supreme Court as it'll get appealed. And if so, the likelihood of the Supreme Court siding against Trump is pretty low to non-existent, right?
I mean, when a state reaches a final decision to exclude Trump from the ballot, he will most certainly appeal that, and that decision will go to the U.S. Supreme Court. And whether they decide to take it up is up to the justices. But what I will say is our Supreme Court does have a few, there's a diversity of different jurisprudence on the Supreme Court. There's originalists, there's textualists, and I think we would find some justices would honor the words of the Constitution and the intent for why Section 3 was passed. In a way that would disqualify Trump. Obviously, we don't know, but I wouldn't say that the possibility would be low.
And I suppose just because one can sort of predict that something will likely be struck down doesn't necessarily mean that it shouldn't be pursued anyway.
Correct. There's always, it's an important feat in our time. I mean, there was a reason why this amendment was passed, why this specific section was passed. And although it hasn't been used very often in the past 150 years, that's because it really hasn't had to be. But this is, it is something that our framers thought about, that they once debated, and that they settled. And they settled that insurrectionists cannot be trusted for public office again.
Have you found that there has been an embracing of this approach, and also really even just enough public knowledge about it that the 14th Amendment disqualifies Trump? Is there a matter of publicizing this? Have corporate media taken up the issue, or have they sort of iced it out?
I think it's been talked about quite often, especially recently with a recent law review article that was released by two conservative law professors arguing that Trump is in fact disqualified from the ballot. And what's interesting about this is that it is a public conversation across the field. It's not just liberals, it's conservatives, it's retired conservative federal judges. People from all different spectrums are discussing this, and it's been part of the national discourse for, I would say, for a while, but it has been picked up in the past month ever since that law review article came out and presented the question.
I think you're talking about William Baud and Michael Stokes Paulson?
Correct.
And this is a paper called The Sweep and Force of Section 3, Section 3 being the specific part of the 14th Amendment that outlines a person's disqualification from holding office in the event of leading an insurrection or rebellion. So finally, Amira, where can people find out more about this effort? If there's many, many Americans, in spite of what it seems in terms of Trump's deep popularity in the Republican voter base, in the general population, there's a deep unpopularity. So for those Americans who are terrified of the prospect of Trump returning to the White House and bringing those dark days back to this nation, what can they do to support this effort? Or is this purely a legal effort?
No, this is a movement for constitutional accountability. If folks want to get involved, they're welcome to visit our website, freespeechforpeople.org or trumpisdisqualified.org. They can speak with their secretaries of states to get involved and to ask them to take action. This is not just purely a legal effort, but it is an attempt and an effort to be accountable to our Constitution.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Is there a website that you can give out?
Freespeechforpeople.org or trumpisdisqualified.org.
And we'll post those from our website. Amira, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
My guest has been Amira Matar. She is a counsel at Free Speech for People. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, racial justice editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.